On today's Josh Neeson's Punch-Out, we continue our look back at the year that was 2022 in the world of pro wrestling with a stop in February. And February is dominated by one major story, that being Cody Rhodes leaving AEW and returning to WWE. We talk all about that and more with Wrestling Observer writer Ian Carey on this edition of Josh Neeson's Punch-Out. Well, for the very first time on this podcast, very special guest, someone I chat with almost every day in Slack, but I've only seen in person a couple times, in person being on Zoom, that being Ian Carey, a writer, a budding editor, I would say, potentially, for WrestlingObserver.com, doing the great work, coming up on his year one anniversary, right?
Almost, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was with the site before I was working with you, because I was doing the show recaps for a few months before I started.
Yes, true.
But yeah.
Yeah. Exciting. But in an actual like paid role, that's always good, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's a plus. That's definitely a good bonus.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, good stuff. You've been doing great stuff. And I'm glad you're making your debut here. You're following Brian Rose in the number two position here. And it's always good. The two-hole in baseball, as you know, is often the best hitters are in that spot the leadoff guy gets a walk and a number two comes on and a good on-base guy. So that's why you're here.
I have a good on-base percentage is what I bring to the table.
That's right. That's right. How did the who's in the Grey Cup? I forgot to ask. And I forgot to look it up.
The 109th Grey Cup. It'll be the Toronto Argonauts versus whoever won from the Western game.
I don't even know. Is it wasn't the Rough Riders, correct? I picked the, was it Montreal? Not Montreal.
No, it was the Blue Bombers.
So the Blue Bombers. Yes.
Yeah. So it's Winnipeg versus Toronto. So
that's what I said. Yeah.
Two good wrestling cities going head to head in Grey Cup football.
Very true. Very true. We'll get to that in CFL Observer. We'll take care of that talk. But let's go through. So for those that have not been here before, I don't know why you'd start with February, but you know, so be it.
Hey.
So this is how we do this. I go over we're going to focus on February 2022 year review series, and we'll go over kind of federation by federation and so on. I reviewed 468 headlines for this one, Ian. So I go through, I pick out some of the key big topics and so on. We'll talk about some of the big rocks, and then we'll focus on a few of the small pebbles in between. But we'll start with a story that affected both WWE and AEW, and that being Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes, it was, as we talked about in our January episode, as people know, there was some talk about his free agency status and his contract status, which surprised a lot of people that was like, okay, well, he's going to obviously, you know, re-sign with AEW. This is just a formality, kind of one of those weird things. But no, lo and behold, that did not happen. And about halfway through the month, give or take, there was an announcement from AEW and Cody and Brandi Rhodes that they would not be returning to AEW. And then later in the month, it was learned that he was going to be returning to WWE. And some of the reasons for that, both sides have not really talked that much about the situation, but it's in terms of specifics. But one of the stories that has kind of leaked out is that loss of booking power and kind of Cody's leadership at the top was a key driver in that. And that, you know, he wasn't really, I think he thought one thing going into it, and then something else kind of evolved through the first 3 years. But that was obviously a big story. One, obviously AEW losing one of their key, you know, pillars. I know they kind of overuse that term, but one of their key figures and one of their top guys for a long time going back to WWE. This is obviously Cody's return to WWE since he initially requested was released after the Stardust era. And then WWE getting a free agent. And when I say this is that they really kind of hadn't signed a big name free agent in quite some time. They've had certain Hollywood celebrities and pop culture celebrities, certain people that have, you know, been signed to NXT and gone through up the ranks. But this is kind of their first big main roster free agent signee in God knows how long. But this whole story, this affected both groups, and really, this is one of the biggest stories of the year for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was like you when I first heard the rumors that, well, I mean, it was reported he was working without a contract and that maybe he wasn't going to resign with AEW. And I remember just thinking like, oh, come on. Like, he's too ingrained in the company to leave. Like, he's got a reality show on Warner Media. He's got Brandy is working in an executive role with the company. Like, it just didn't seem realistic that he would leave AEW. And especially not go back to WWE. That seemed completely like not feasible.
Yeah.
But you mentioned, I think it was in a Sports Illustrated article where a statement had kind of come out where his loss of booking power, or kind of being promised one thing in terms of having creative power in the company, and then 3 years later at the end of his contract, he doesn't really have that anymore. And that played a big role in his leaving. And it's interesting to look back on now that we've seen some other backstage conflicts in AEW that seem to be around creative a little bit. You know, we've seen Andrade wasn't happy with what he was doing. Obviously, there was problems with CM Punk. But this was really the first sort of inkling that we got that maybe there was some problems backstage in AEW. And of course, throughout the rest of the year, there would be many more stories to come out.
Certainly was. Yeah, this was fascinating on a lot of levels. And obviously, we'll talk more about Cody throughout the year because he had made his big return to WrestleMania. And so, and spoilers for those people who don't know for the future episodes of the series. But yeah, this was, I think you're right. This was kind of, I would say, the first crack, but this was a big one in terms of the facade of AEW being the place to be. And that would obviously change a lot through the course of the year. But this was this is a fascinating story in terms of just how it first kind of started making its way out. And again, you have both said this, there's no way he's going to go back. He was in AEW for a reason. And then just kind of as stories kind of trickled out and as kind of people started to put things together, it's like, I guess it does make sense that he would leave. And to his point, it was, I think he might have said this to Dave, I'm saying it's probably his time to leave the territory.
Yeah.
And it was just his time to go. And, you know, I don't think that you kind of look back at this. I think part of the issue was that that run that he had against the Factory, and it just with
the Anthony Ogogo feud.
People kind of turned on him a bit, and it just, that whole feud just seemed to last forever. And it really wasn't that compelling because he wasn't going against top stars. And you think about some of the matches he had, I think we've forgotten about the Dustin Rhodes match, obviously, was a huge brick in kind of this building of AEW as a power. The MJF match, I mean, that one just kind of is in the history books. That was a great feud. I mean, he's had so many of these, you know, the world title stipulation thing against Jericho, I think that may have hurt a little bit, but he was still an emotional character. I just think they just stopped. They kind of were like hoping his star power would carry him some of these lesser feuds, and it just went forever and forever and forever. And just the compelling stuff wasn't there as time went along, and it was just kind of more of this filler stuff. So I think there's just a lot of factors that kind of went into it.
Yeah, and I do wonder if sort of the creative rift between Cody and Tony Khan maybe started around that feud with the Factory and Anthony Ogogo. There was that one segment where Cody did a promo that was very not well received.
Right.
And I can imagine Tony looking at that and going like, I don't know if I can just let Cody do whatever he wants. You know, maybe I shouldn't be giving him the creative freedom that he has been given. And then you go to the last few months that Cody was in AEW and the fans were turning on him. And the belief was that Cody didn't want to turn heel because he wanted to remain a babyface. He wanted to be involved in the charity work that the company does. I'm not sure in 2022, if you have to be a babyface to do charity work. I'm sure if Chris Jericho showed up to like a canned food drive, they would not turn him away. But that was the story coming out, is that he just didn't want to be a babyface. And but the fans really wanted to turn him heel. So I could see that also being a bit of a rift between him and Tony, where it's Cody wants one thing creatively, wants to be a babyface, but what Tony wants creatively and what the fans want was different. So I can see there being like a real creative rift that developed between Cody and Tony Khan that ultimately left and or ultimately led to Cody deciding it was time to leave the territory.
So let's go some of the rest of the happenings in WWE. The Elimination Chamber, WWE's return to Saudi. I believe this is the first one since the pandemic, and they brought the stars and had some, you know, this kind of really enforcing more that these shows mean something, especially because they started hooking this into Mania with the timing and everything like that. Roman Reigns defeating Goldberg, two big guys in the mind. Reigns defeating Bill Goldberg in about 6 minutes time, short match. Yeah. Goldberg, we learned afterwards, said he had COVID-19 and just about was recovering from that and had about 2 weeks notice when getting the call. Typical, you know, Vince McMahon, old school Vince McMahon booking. Just going to sign someone on and get him in there for the Saudi show. Bianca Belair winning the Women's Elimination Chamber match and then making her set to challenge for the Raw Women's title against Becky Lynch at WrestleMania 38. Brock Lesnar winning the WWE title, regaining that in the Elimination Chamber match. Again, this kind of changed up storyline for what happened in January with day one and then the Rumble and all this stuff. There was this weird Lashley, you know, injury that where he didn't essentially get out of the pod. That whole thing was kind of strange how they did that in the match. Regardless, Brock Lesnar, this cleared the way for him to be set for a champion versus champion match at WrestleMania 38 against Roman Reigns. We'll talk more about the stipulations for that in a second. Becky Lynch defeating Lita on this show. Lita returning, again, in a very much a Saudi-type thing, brings someone back from the 90s, kind of put him back in. She talked about her decision to work in Saudi, despite some previous criticism she had about that arrangement in the past, and then she revealed she had no plans with WWE past Elimination Chamber. As far as the chamber goes, and then we'll kind of get into some of the rest of this. Let me go over the we'll skip that. Elimination Chamber. Again, more importance put on this. They're making the efforts to make this seem like it's a bigger deal for the everyday WWE fan. You know, when in the past he's kind of been like, hey, we're doing these, you don't necessarily have to watch them. Yeah. It seems like they're saying you got to watch these if you're gonna stay in the storyline, so to speak.
Yeah, well, this show was like a very pivotal show on the road to WrestleMania, you know? So this was a very important show in WWE storyline, whereas maybe the greatest Royal Rumble when they did that show was just kind of like, here's a show.
Yeah.
And it doesn't factor into storylines as much. This was really pivotal in setting up the big matches for WrestleMania. But this was kind of a weird time for WWE's top programs because everything got messed up when Roman got COVID and missed day one. So it seemed like everything they did after that was just trying to put the pieces back in place for where they wanted to get everything by WrestleMania.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And we'll get to kind of where WrestleMania ended up, or at least the plans for it. We'll go down some of these, and I'll kick them over to you for any thoughts. So things we learned during the month. Nia Jax turned down a Royal Rumble offer to return. We'd heard that being the case of the Iconics as well. They declined to return. Yeah. Brian Kendrick was granted his WWE release. We'll talk more about what happened after that a little bit later on. Shane McMahon out of WWE. After the Royal Rumble debacle, we learned that there was a lot of issues behind the scenes. He was no longer be booked for future shows and essentially was fired from the company in terms of any creative role, no need for an on-screen role. So that was a whole weird thing with that whole McMahon family relationship. Sami Zayn was booted from the Jackass Forever premiere. That was a fun little skit that happened and then got ran off by Knoxville, Johnny Knoxville and his friends. Later on, Johnny Knoxville would challenge Sami Zayn for WrestleMania and kind of up in that, you know, at the time people kind of rolled their eyes at some of this, but it kind of helped elevate Sami Zayn a little bit and give him some fun stuff. And obviously he would have a pretty fun rest of the year, as we'll talk about in later shows. WB reporting 1 billion plus in revenue for 2021. Just a little bit of pocket change there. Bianca Carelli, Santino Marella's daughter, signed with WWE. And we'll go this WWE WrestleMania chunk, and then we'll kick it over to you. A couple of things that developed during the course of the month. They confirmed the title unification stipulation for Mania 38. confirmed that Charlotte Flair versus Ronda Rousey is going to be booked for night one, or the main event night one, and then Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns for night two. WWE Hall of Fame ceremony is going to be scheduled for post-SmackDown on the Friday, which is a little bit different than what they've done in the past. Kevin Owens versus Steve Austin. That was a plan that, that we learned was being discussed for WrestleMania 38. We didn't know what was going to happen there. There was also reportedly from Dave, an Austin-level surprise, quote-unquote, planned in addition for WrestleMania. The Undertaker was announced to be the first inductee into the Hall of Fame that year. Vince McMahon was set to appear live on the Pat McAfee show, and there was talk of a Mania program in the works against each other, with Pat McAfee wrestling some sort of match. We didn't know what it was going to be, but on the books at the time, it was written as McMahon versus McAfee, which we will talk about that in a future episode. As we mentioned, Becky Lynch versus Bianca Belair, set for Mania Night 1, and then Logan Paul to make his in-ring debut alongside The Miz against The Mysterios in a WrestleMania 38 tag match. So a lot happening there. Thoughts about any of that chunk we just talked about?
Well, just starting with Logan Paul making his in-ring debut at WrestleMania 38, I think this would work out rather well for WWE. And it's interesting because Logan Paul, so he just had the two matches this year. But then there's also like, is he in the running for Rookie of the Year for just having those two matches, or what? You know, is he in a special category away from the other rookies? But I remember when the Austin rumors came out that Austin was going to be wrestling a match. And it was shortly before rumors came out that Vince McMahon was going to be wrestling a match, too. And it just seemed so out there that in 2022, these guys would be getting back in the ring. I'm not sure I believe. Well, I assumed that Vince wasn't going to wrestle an actual match, and he didn't, but he got kind of physical in there.
That's one way of putting it.
Yeah. He was involved in a match, or, you know, wrestling with Pat McAfee. But I was surprised that, well, not so much with Austin, because it was in Texas, so you knew that he would play a role, but actually wrestling a match, I didn't think that would happen. But it ended up being, I would say, like, Owens versus Austin at WrestleMania was one of the cooler moments in WrestleMania history.
It was. So I
think, yeah. I think it worked out well for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. So let's go over this next chunk here. So WWE obviously hoping for, this has been talked about forever, Rock versus Roman Reigns for WrestleMania 39. That being the next one coming up here. And also Ronda Rousey versus Becky Lynch to see how much things change. We're still, you know, all these months later, the plan is hopefully still to have that happen. We have no idea if either of those are going to happen. Kurt Angle, a 3-week angle that he was going to be brought back for was dropped. He talked about that in January. There's some talk about bringing him back for a short-term angle. That idea was dropped. Ronda Rousey called out some WWE fan criticism. And she talked a lot throughout the month about the return and coming back. She talked about, you know, chatting with Vince McMahon in terms of kind of how to approach things and kind of like, I think to paraphrase, kind of lighten up a bit and not take things, not take things so personal and all that. And that if the character they're trying to portray, they are, there's a certain way of going about it. And the way that she was going about it was not kind of the best idea. She talked about her new ring gear, which she said was to kind of, again, to paraphrase, kind of cover up her body. She was still kind of coming back from pregnancy or being pregnant, and that she was kind of coming back into a form that she was more comfortable with. So she talked about that as well. WrestleMania Backlash was announced for May. TJ Wilson, there was some discussion that you know, he hadn't been seen for a while, and there were some questions about whether he's still with the company. It was reported that he was, and that he was just simply taking some time off to help heal his neck. He was having some issues there. Roxy was offered and signed a deal with WWE. NXT Level
Up, nice.
I would say so. NXT Level Up was finally announced to replace 205 Live, which I think people were just waiting for months and months and months, this lame duck show that just didn't make any sense. And then finally, they decided to essentially do a developmental for developmental with NXT. And also Quinn McKay, formerly of Ring of Honor, made her debut. I believe, is it Kelly Kincaid? Is that the name
she's using? I believe that's her name now,
Yeah, in NXT Level Up. D'Von Dudley, it was a producer with WWE, had spinal surgery. We learned that a Corey Graves and Carmella reality show was going to be coming to YouTube, which, you know, I mean, set your timers for that one. Spanish language announcer Carlos Cabrera was fired from WWE and then later signed with AAA. WWE learned that they were going to rebrand their weekend house shows, their Saturday shows, to Saturday Night's Main Event, and also Sunday shows to be called Sunday Stunners, and that's something they have kept from here on out. It's a nice little branding thing there. Sami Zayn, the aforementioned Sami Zayn, won the Intercontinental title on SmackDown. Drake Maverick was reportedly back in WWE in more of a creative role after being released in the pandemic era cuts, or somewhere along the way. It's hard to keep track of where the different cuts were.
He was cut several times.
I know.
He's the TNA of WWE. Every time you think he's out for good, he just pops back up. And I actually, when I was reading this over, I checked. I was like, is he still with WWE? Yeah, he's a writer for Raw.
Oh, is he really? Okay.
Yeah, so he's still with the company. So, I mean, I'm sure he'll get released again at some point, but then they'll just bring him back again.
That's right. That's like the rebound. Bobby Lashley, I was learned he suffered a shoulder injury from the Lesnar matches that he had, specifically at the Royal Rumble. Basically, he was taking all the German suplexes, just falling right on his shoulder. It was learned that he might need surgery. I don't believe he got that surgery. It was just some time off, some recovery. A couple of transactions. AJ Styles signed a new multi-year contract with the company to stay a bit longer. And then Cesaro became a free agent as his contract expired. This one came out of nowhere as he reportedly didn't like the extension offer. We know what happened with him. And then we'll go over these three, and then I'll kick it over to you. Machine Gun Kelly announced he was producing the WWE 2K22 soundtrack and was going to be a playable character. Obviously, he has had some run-ins with WWE stars before, notably John Cena back in the day. Madcap Moss passed all medical tests following a nasty Elimination Chamber bump. I completely forgot about this. Yeah. This is a pretty bad one. I believe it's on his neck. And then going back to January, we learned that Corey Graves was cleared to compete. Never heard anything about that. Corey Graves confirmed it, but he said that wrestling wasn't an immediate goal of his and still hasn't been all these months later. Thoughts about any of that?
Well, let's go back here and talk about Cesaro a little bit, because this did seem like it came out of nowhere, because at the time, WWE was locking up a lot of guys with bigger money deals. So like Kevin Owens had re-signed, I'm not sure if Kevin Owens had re-signed yet, but Sami Zayn was also re-signed like early 2022.
Yep.
So it didn't seem like Cesaro would be a guy that they would let go, but it sounds like he wasn't getting the same kind of offers that a Kevin Owens or a Sami Zayn did. So he was also he had extended his contract by a year, the previous year. And so I guess was still trying to hope to get something better, but WWE just never offered it. And I was surprised by that, because he's been such a consistent performer for them for years now. It doesn't seem like he would be somebody that they would want to give up and let go to AEW, but that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we got here? So Rousey, when she first came back, is an interesting story. Because if you remember that first promo she did after she came back from the Royal Rumble, it seemed like she thought she was a heel, but the company thought she was a babyface. Mm-hmm. And then they had to tell her, like what you were saying, like, you know, smile more, be a babyface. But I think Rousey has always wanted to be a heel. I think after some fans kind of turned on her in the feud with Becky Lynch back around WrestleMania 35, I do think she took that personally, and I think she wanted to turn heel. And what we're seeing from her now with Shayna Baszler on SmackDown is what she originally wanted to do when she came back. And I'm interested to see how far Rousey takes her new heel role, because I think she's motivated to do it. She said on her video game streams before that she really wants to be a Roddy Piper type heel, where you're not the cool guy heel. You're making sure everybody hates you and loves the baby face that you're working with. So I feel like she's been motivated to go down this path for a long time now, but Vince wouldn't let her, but now the new regime will.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was pretty interesting. What else did we have going on here? So AJ Styles, of course, he re-signed at the same time that like Owens and Sami Zayn are getting their deals as well. So let's see what else we got here. In terms of Corey Graves, So Corey Graves being cleared to compete, like, yeah, he could go and wrestle now, but the spot that he's got is much cushier than any type of wrestling role that he could work out.
Yeah.
Like being at the broadcast table, he can do that for the rest of his career, whereas his athletic window is much, much shorter. So I'm not sure, even if he is cleared to compete, I'm not sure if Corey Graves has a lot of motivation to get back in the ring. Mm.
Let's go to NXT. Not a lot going on here in NXT this month. Blair Davenport suffering a leg injury during a NXT UK women's title match. We had NXT Vengeance Day. Bron Breakker retaining his title over Santos Escobar, and the Creeds won the men's Dusty Tag Team Classic to earn a NXT Tag Team title shot down the road. Dolph Ziggler made a surprise appearance, crashing a championship summit. Eventually, later on in the month, would become the number one contender to a title, to the title. Candy, I could not pick this person out of a lineup. Candy Floss. her contract expired in NXT UK. The Women's Dusty Classic Tournament was revealed as well. And then NXT UK champion Ilya Dragunov was announced. He was going to be working several different progress shows as essentially they tried to get some UK people some work outside the company and all that. So not a lot going on in NXT. It was just kind of a, you know, business as usual for the NXT 2.0 brand at the time.
Yeah, I mean, they're just a few months. They're just like a few months into the rebrand and being without Triple H. So definitely at this stage of NXT, they're just trying to kind of get on their feet a little bit, figure out who are the stars they can get behind. I mean, they definitely landed on Bron Breakker as the main guy, and then bringing in a guy from the main roster, Dolph Ziggler, a little bit more experience for him to work with. But this is NXT trying to figure out what it is now. At this point in February 2022, Candy Floss, her contract expiring with NXT UK. I wonder if at this point they've figured out they're not moving too much further with NXT UK, because so now Triple H is removed from the equation, and so they're not going to re-sign people. And of course, we would get to like a couple of months ago when they ultimately said, okay, NXT UK is shutting down. So I wonder if they made the decision back then and just went about letting contracts expire without renewing people.
All right, let me paint a scenario for you that I'm sure has happened before. You're on your laptop, you want to watch a soccer game, you want to watch a baseball game, you want to watch this. And you get that annoying pop-up that says it is region-specific and you can't watch it. Isn't that the worst? I've dealt with this before, and I found a solution years ago, and I'm going to give this solution to you right now. NordVPN. That's right. You've heard about VPN services before. Nord is one I have personally used since 2020, and we're now in partnership with them, and I have a great discount for my listeners. If you ever thought about using a service like this, this is the right time to do it. NordVPN.com/F4W. NordVPN.com/F4W. Get a huge discount off your VPN plan, plus 4 months for free, completely risk-free, 30-day money-back guarantee. I think you're going to love it. Again, if you've ever thought about a VPN service, right now is the time to do it. Limited time offer. NordVPN.com/F4W. Huge discount, great security. You don't have to worry about where you are, and it's awesome. Check them out. Let's flip to AEW. We have a little bit of news going on here. A lot of transactional news, because this was the lead up to Revolution in March. So a lot of kind of build and a lot of transactions this month. Let's kind of start from the beginning. So Rio, we learned that she was going to miss about 3 weeks with a broken collarbone. She suffered that in her January match at the Battle of the Belts with Britt Baker. An album to commemorate Black History Month was announced, and also a concert for Revolution Weekend was announced later on as well. I heard really not a lot about either. It was just kind of a thing they did, and who knows if they're going to go back to it. We talked about this earlier. Brian Kendrick was signed. So he was released, and then like 2 days later, it was announced that he was going to be taking on Jon Moxley on Dynamite in Cincinnati, I believe. And then the match was pulled like a day later due to these past anti-Semitic comments and some other weird stuff Kendrick said in interviews like a long time ago. It was like rapid fire succession. All these things happened. Then he was pulled, and then we haven't really heard. He apologized for the comments afterwards and tried to walk them back, but it was kind of the damage was done at that point, and AEW said, we're not going to move forward. Paige Van Zandt appeared on Dynamite, and to show you just how much changes, she attacked Brandi Rhodes. And then that was supposed
this was like a lifetime ago.
It really was. Yeah. And then, you know, weeks later, she was just like, I'm good. I'm out. Tony Khan. So I put these Tony Khan quotes and so on in one section because we always kind of laugh at, like, everything's big, everything's huge. So yeah. Tony Khan said more, quote unquote, big signings coming in the short term. Top wrestler to walk through Forbidden Door soon. A huge signing, he put it. He confirmed that he was not running for Congress. There was a filing that appeared
filing that appeared online.
He called that fake. He later said in a different interview he was working on, quote unquote, something pretty big that, quote unquote, would be massive. Later in another interview saying the big and important announcement is like the first dance. So he was not shying away from really kind of putting the emphasis on some of these big announcements and signings. One of them being Keith Lee, who made his debut, was talked about early in the month that AEW had talked about signing him, but he made his debut on Dynamite, took on Isaiah Cassidy, and just the one lasting image, obviously him throwing him in that Beal and just launching him like across the ring. That was quite a moment. And then he was added to the Face of the Revolution ladder match. Jay White debuted as well, attacking Roppongi Vice in a backstage segment. I remember that was one of those diamonds, like, eight things happened within like a 10 or 15 minute span. Yeah. It's like debut, like all this stuff kind of happened as tends to do on Dynamite. Vanessa Bourne, formerly of NXT, made her debut at Dark. And then Josh Woods from Ring of Honor also made his return to AEW Dark as well. So there was some foreshadowing there. AQA made her debut and she signed a deal later in the month. Hikaru Shida was returned now, so she was going to be going back to Japan. And they announced her for a match against Hikari Noah for this Grand Princess show for TJPW, Ice Ribbon for a March event. So kind of that, again, that kind of open door policy with allowing talents to work elsewhere, essentially if they don't have any plans for them. She headed back to Japan and worked some shows there. Nick Wayne, the Prodigy, signed his AEW deal, was presented to him by Darby Allin, at Defy Wrestling. Defy owner Matt Farmer, co-owner, talked to me about that whole story. If you guys want to go back and listen to that in the archives, that was kind of a cool story how that happened. And someday we'll see Nick Wayne in the rings of AEW. That'll be pretty fun as well. Shane Swerve Strickland, another Pacific Northwest guy, reportedly he did sign with AEW. He was yet to make his debut. Buddy Matthews signed with AEW and then aligned with Malakai Black on Dynamite. And then Megan Bain, who is a female talent that AEW is kind of starting to put a little bit of focus on Dark, kind of quietly. She put together three or four wins. I'd never even heard of her before, mm-hmm. but they kind of started adding more of a presentation to her and all that stuff. Tore her ACL at very bad time for her and was out. Now she's going to be out for about 9 months. So she should be due back.
She should be coming back, yeah.
At any point. So who knows? She could be on a Dark or Dark Elevation screen near you. Thoughts about any of that chunk?
All right. Well, let's see here. So Tony Khan's something big that would be massive, and like the first dance was him buying Ring of Honor. And I mean, a lot of people will point to the purchase of Ring of Honor as when AEW booking started to become, well, I mean, you introduced like four different title belts that are now starting to be defended on your show. So it's interesting that it was 9 months ago that the announcement about Ring of Honor was made. And we've still had Ring of Honor storylines and championship bouts playing out on AEW TV, but we've never gotten an announcement of, is this what's going to happen with Ring of Honor long-term? Are they going to get their own show? What is the long-term plan for Ring of Honor? I don't know. 9 months seems like a long time to have not moved Ring of Honor into Universal Studios or onto a YouTube show, or to have done something to separate Ring of Honor from AEW. But, you know, it was, he said it was going to be industry changing, and it was industry changing. Let's see what was going on here. So Keith Lee debuting. Keith Lee and Swerve getting signed, I think, is big for AEW. They seem to be doing almost the Kenny Omega Hangman Page storyline, mm-hmm. where they're a team, but you know they're not getting along too well. And I wonder if this storyline that they're doing now is a way of kind of moving them more into, like, once they feud with each other, then moving into singles and kind of being in that top tier program. Because I do think, like, especially Keith Lee, like Keith Lee is a guy you can look at and he just feels like a guy who should be in the main event. And Swerve Strickland is really, really good. So I think he's another guy that could be in the main event as well. So I think a few years from now, Strickland and Keith Lee are going to turn out to be some really key signings for AEW. And I think that's what the plan is too. I think we're just sort of getting the seeds now of their story, which is going to, you know, play out over the next few years. Buddy Matthews coming in, aligning with Malakai Black. You know, we're seeing more vignettes of House of Black on TV now, but it always felt like House of Black, like many others in AEW, you'd get them for a little bit, you'd get like a storyline, and then that story would conclude, and then they'd be gone for weeks, and you wouldn't see them for a while. Mm-hmm. And it seems like there's a lot of that in AEW, where there's a group that's like, hey, these guys are really cool, and this is starting to catch on, but then they finish something up, and they're not immediately put into something else, so it feels like they cool off a little bit. And so it'll be interesting to see what AEW does with House of Black moving forward. And yeah, some other big signings here. Nick Wayne, what age is he at now?
He is 19. I don't think he's graduated high school yet. He actually might be 17 or 18, something like that. So he hasn't graduated high school yet. Once he does that, then they're talking about using him, assuming he's probably not going to go to college at this point. The thing is, his career is pretty well set.
Yeah.
So I think they're waiting for him. He's going to graduate high school, and then we're going to kind of see what how they handle that. I assume he's not going to be just like brought in and start on the Dynamite kind of run. Then I think it'll be kind of a big deal when they bring him in, and it might be like a surprise kind of Dynamite appearance, like an open challenge type thing. You know, honestly, I mean, if they really wanted to do it, they could do it in January 4th when they debut in Seattle. I mean, that would be, I assume they wouldn't save it for an Elevation, but I could see them doing some sort of open challenge on that and Nick making his debut. I think that'd be a pretty cool moment. Can you imagine a Danielson Nick Wayne match would be pretty cool if they were able to kind of do something like that. Darby might want to be his first opponent. I don't know how you do like a Darby open challenge, but that'd be my prediction kind of sitting here today, is maybe they figure out a way before he gets on the road with them, so to speak, full time, that Dynamite happens in January.
Yeah. I could also see them doing something big with Swerve on that January 4th show, because he's got so much of a history at that promotion too. That could be a time where stuff between him and Keith Lee really hit the fan.
All right, I'll go with this smaller second chunk here. Not a lot here. We finally learned this oft talked about Owen Hart tournament. It was finally going to kick off at the May Dynamite in Long Island, New York. So they've been talked about for months and months and months and months and months and months and months. Finally, we actually had some sort of idea when the thing was going to start. Battle of the Belts 2 was announced for April in Texas, and AEW Double or Nothing announced for May. Jake Atlas had surgery for a torn ACL. Revolution card was taking shape. One of the big matches there, CM Punk versus MJF in a dog collar match. We learned that AEW's Kenny Omega was still awaiting hernia surgery and was not going to be returning in February after all. Rey Fénix also going to be out another month until March at this time, recovering from his arm injury. Jeff Hardy told a fan, and he didn't realize there was also a reporter, saying that he was going to go to AEW. He mentioned that during a concert. That became a thing. Brian Cage, after essentially being MIA from the rings of AEW, reportedly said that his AEW contract was picked up, which surprised a lot of people. And Cage kind of denied that, but apparently it was, because he is back in action now. And Helico tore his ACL and his meniscus, but his recovery, he said, was ahead of schedule. He's already back in action now. And AEW announced their debuts in Detroit, Ontario, California, and long-awaited Los Angeles, California for the Wednesday after Double or Nothing. Not a lot of like huge news there, but kind of, again, just like transactional stuff and kind of like the Kenny Omega thing obviously was noteworthy, but it was, you know, a lot of just kind of getting things in set up for the spring, I guess.
Yeah. So Brian Cage getting his option picked up. I remember when that was reported, like he hadn't been on TV forever. They were letting some contracts expire. So everyone just figured, well, of course, like, you know, he's not being used on television, so they're going to let his contract expire. So it was really surprising when it was picked up. But what we didn't know at that time is that Tony Khan had purchased Ring of Honor, and Brian Cage is a good guy to have in Ring of Honor, you know, because he's a big guy who can be a big heel, but he can also wrestle the Ring of Honor style. So he works perfectly for Ring of Honor. But again, we didn't know that Tony Khan was purchasing the company at that time. So it seemed kind of weird because Cage had been, he'd been in Team Taz, he'd been the FDW champion, then he got, he left Team Taz and that storyline had gotten wrapped up and then we just never saw him. He was, you know, not on television very much. And I mean, AEW has a lot of people who kind of fill the same role that Brian Cage does, like sort of like the big guy that you can feed to like a baby face that you want to build. But you've also got like Lance Archer who can perform that role. Powerhouse Hobbs can perform that role. Miro, you remember when Miro was a wrestler for AEW? He could do that.
Time long ago. Yeah.
So I think it was kind of easy for Brian Cage to get lost in the shuffle in AEW a bit, but you know, now he's back and he wrestled Wardlow, he wrestled Samoa Joe. And I'm assuming when Ring of Honor starts up or gets its own show, that he'll be a major factor there. So the Battle of the Belts being set for April in Texas, you and Brian had talked about this on the show, yesterday. The Battle of the Belts, this was supposed to be your Clash of the Champions. It was supposed to be a really big deal. I think when we found out it was only going to be an hour, I think that made the shows feel less important to fans. I think there's kind of a feeling that a 1 hour wrestling show doesn't mean much. It's not like an event that you have to check out. So, I don't know what the long-term deal is going to be with Battle of the Belts, but they might as well just change it to a 2 hour Rampage. Like the last one that they did was they did a Rampage and then a Battle of the Belts. I think that's just basically where they're going to go with it. So it's really just a 2 hour Rampage. Jake Atlas having surgery for a torn ACL. It was a rough year for Jake Atlas.
I'd say so. Yeah.
Not a lot went his way. Yeah.
All right, so let's go to Japan real quick. Again, I'm not a huge Japanese wrestling fan, but for the record, again, we have to include this stuff in here. John Moxley announced he was going to be returning to New Japan for the Windy City Riot event. More COVID issues affected Japanese shows as well as the New Japan tours, especially their Golden Series tour that moved some shows around, canceled shows, what have you. Talent was on and off those shows. Josh Alexander announced he was going to be making his strong debut, and that was a big deal to him. Tama Tonga re-signed with the company. Tenzan injured his knee and was off the Golden Series shows. Minoru Suzuki announced he was going to be set for New Japan shows in Dallas and Chicago. Kairi Sane returned to stardom, and that would obviously start a pretty big year for her that could be even bigger by the time we get to January. Sonata won the U.S. title, the IWGP U.S. title, and Taguchi and Master Wato won the IWGP Junior Tag Team titles during the Golden Series tour. Lineup was set for the New Japan 50th anniversary show, as well as the bracket and schedule for the New Japan Cup. Fujita won the GHC heavyweight title at Noah's Gain Control event. Kaiji Muto, his obviously big year, decided to vacate the tag team titles due to a hip injury. Gabriel Kidd announced he was going to be taking time away from pro wrestling, saying he's not well, dealing with some mental health issues. And then Kota Ibushi and the aforementioned Tenzan were off the New Japan Cup tournament due to injury. I don't believe Ibushi has been back since. Is dealing with a variety of injuries and also other issues we'll talk about later in the year. But yeah, that's not a huge amount of stuff in Japan, but anything of that stand out to you?
Yeah, one of the, like, Tama Tonga, what he's done in 2022, I think is even more surprising than Cody leaving AEW and going to WWE. So he resigns in February, and like, after that, I mean, there's sort of these teases that he's, you know, the Gorillas of Destiny might be leaving Bullet Club, or there's this tension between Bullet Club and the Gorillas of Destiny. But I never, ever thought that Tama Tonga, who's been a heel for like a decade in New Japan Pro Wrestling, that he would get kicked out of Bullet Club, turn babyface, and then start wrestling alongside Hiroshi Tanahashi and actually be kind of good in that role. I find to be very surprising. I never thought that would happen because Tama Tonga was such a heel. I was very surprised that he turned babyface, but he's doing good in that role. But I had always thought that he would have been a perfect heel in AEW because of all that stuff that happened between the Elite and Bullet Club, kind of in their final days with the company, where it seemed like Tama Tonga and other original members of Bullet Club or the Japanese contingent in Bullet Club, there was a rift between them and Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks and Cody and stuff like that. So I always thought it was inevitable that Tama Tonga would end up in AEW as sort of a heel to wrestle against the Elite. But now he's babyface Tama Tonga, and I find that very surprising.
Mm. Let's go to, we'll combine Impact and Ring of Honor because not a ton of news, obviously, with Ring of Honor. Impact, Matt Cardona winning the digital media title during the month. They offered a head coaching job to Sean Payton, formerly of the New Orleans Saints, which is kind of just a PR stunt there. However, they did offer a job, and the job's accepted, by Lance Storm, who joined the company as a producer and a coach. Laredo Kid signed a deal with the company. Steve Macklin and Deonna Purrazzo became engaged. Josh Alexander's Impact deal and also his U.S. work visa expired. They did that kind of an angle on TV where he was essentially out of Impact. He was off the Team Impact tag team match against Honor No More at No Surrender. They kind of made this part of a deal where he's having issues, won a match against Moose. So they took a real-life situation and just kind of worked it in to their storylines. Mm-hmm. At No Surrender, Jay White defeating Eric Young on that show. Jay White making, I believe that was his in-ring debut for Impact. If not, it was obviously his special event appearance, a debut. Good Brothers defeated Guerrillas of Destiny. And then Moose, at that time, the Impact World Champion, retained the title over W. Morrissey. Cody Deaner re-signed a deal. And then Moose, we learned he was working through a torn labrum. So some question about whether he was going to need to take some time off. And I don't think he ever did. He just kind of worked through it and healed. Ring of Honor, we'll flip to them. Samoa Joe, CM Punk, and Brian Danielson were announced as the final inductees into their Hall of Fame. And then the Briscoes announced they were going to be defending the Ring of Honor tag team titles at Warrior Wrestling and also at April's Supercard of Honor as well. Again, this is kind of before people knew that Tony Khan was buying the company, but they were just, you know, kind of like what Jonathan Gresham was doing, defending the title all over the place. Mm-hmm. Just some stuff going on there. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, well, let's talk about Impact hiring Lance Storm as a producer and coach.
That's right.
Lance Storm, obviously, of this website. I feel Lance Storm should be hired by the wrestling industry as a whole as their like logic and continuity officer. Like any, because Lance Storm, if you listen to his show with Brian Alvarez, it's about 90% him pointing out things that don't make sense on wrestling shows. He's very, very good at it. So I think Lance Storm joining Impact is a very, you know, big pickup for them. Obviously, I did like the jokes where I think a few months after this, they had a reverse battle royal.
Yes. Yes.
And I think the idea was, well, please have Lance be the agent for that match.
That's what I said.
That would just blow his head. Yeah.
I tweeted at him. I said, you got to do this. You got to do this.
It's like, Lance, here's your project for the day. We're going to have a reverse battle royal, and I want you to make it make as much sense as possible. Go. You've got 8 hours to construct your match. This was actually a fairly decent time for Impact because you had a bunch of guys who couldn't go to New Japan Pro Wrestling, right? So you had Jay White, you had the Guerrillas of Destiny. Honor No More came in at around this point too. So you did have this like influx of talent.
Yep.
I remember the Josh Alexander deal. That was interesting because if you remember, they mentioned him in a segment on Dynamite. I think it was Brandi Rhodes said to Ethan Page, like, we only signed you so we could get closer to Josh Alexander.
That's right.
Which I took as like, oh, well, Josh Alexander is coming in. Otherwise, why would he be mentioned? But yeah, I mean, you know, he re-signed with Impact and basically he's in that role now where he's the world champion delivering like really good, solid matches for Impact every night. So I think that's worked out good for them.
I'd say so. Let's go over the junk drawer section. This is everything that happened everywhere else. It wasn't one with the big groups. I'll go over this first section here. Ricky Steamboat announced he was going to appear at MLW Superfight. Noteworthy because there'd be a lot of Ricky Steamboat in pro wrestling again in 2022. Yeah. Thunder Rosa. So kind of the trend of some of these were a lot of these, I'm going to talk about a lot of these talents that were released by WWE were getting opportunities. They're getting their first matches, other spots. One of those being Ember Moon, getting her spot getting a match against Thunder Rosa for Warrior Wrestling. That was a pretty high profile match. Obviously she was not signed by AEW at that point. So it was one of her first big matches. She was being very selective about indies when she was going back out in the road. So this is a big one for her. Matt Cardona won the NWA World title and on a house show taping sort of thing called Power Trip they were doing somewhere down south. And then that set up a title match against Nick Aldis for the Crockett Cup. We'll talk a lot about Nick Aldis this year. Shane Strickland, Swerve, was going to be returning to GCW for two April shows. This is before, obviously, his signing. Biff Busick announced for GCW's Bloodsport and also Spring Break events as well. Timothy Thatcher announced he was going to be returning to action at Bloodsport as well. John Moxley was also announced for Bloodsport. So we start to see WrestleMania weekend events start to take shape. Speaking of that, X-Pac challenging Joey Janela. A sentence I didn't think I'd say a year ago, but here we are. X-Pac challenging Joey Janela for Spring Break, Joey Janela's Spring Break 6. And then John Moxley versus AJ Gray also signed for that event as well. John Morrison making his GCW debut during that weekend at Gringo Loco's The World on Lucha and also Bloodsport as well. It's kind of a unique pairing there. GCW announced they were going to be co-promoting a UK show with TNT Extreme Wrestling. Nick Gage signed an exclusive deal with GCW that they believe will keep him there for the rest of his career. We'll see about that. Jeff Jarrett was named the Crockett Cup Ambassador. Jeff Jarrett's big year of going all over the wrestling chessboard.
Jeff Jarrett, man.
Ken Anderson, remember him, denied claims that he scammed wrestling students. We talked about Bloodsport Ray. Keith Lee and Mia Yim got married. John Cena's Peacemaker renewed for a second season, and John Cena is going to be announced to be in a Looney Tunes movie. I think Peacemaker is a great show, so I'll throw that out there as well. CYN, Control Your Narrative, announced their first two live shows and also an imminent network TV deal.
That'll work out real good for them, I think.
That's true. And I mentioned Minoru Suzuki in New Japan. He announced a ton of dates, basically wrestling everywhere for all these different indies throughout the United States. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, let's go back to Matt Cardona winning the NWA World title. And boy, this seems like a long time ago in NWA history. A lot has changed in the NWA since then. But I remember when Matt Cardona won the NWA title. And I thought that this was going to be a really good angle for the NWA because he was like a perfect antagonist for the NWA mindset, right? And so his whole gimmick was that he was going to come in and save the NWA. And I just thought he was a perfect heel for the NWA and that this was going to be a good way for them to move past just having, like, because Nick Aldis had been the NWA champion for like years and then he lost it to Trevor Murdoch. Trevor Murdoch had basically the Dusty Rhodes run with the title where he only holds it for like a couple of months and then loses it to the Knicks big heel or back to the old big heel. So I thought this was going to be the start of a new kind of company-wide story where Cardona's got his heel group and he's feuding with all the top baby faces, but he ended up getting injured. And so he didn't vacate the title, but they did this kind of weird convoluted thing to get it back on Murdoch. And it just seems like it all went to hell after that. NWA obviously in like recently with the things that Nick Aldis has been saying about the company, the title belt going on Tyrus and sort of some backlash from that. It just seems like February 2022 was a far better time for the NWA than what's happening now. There was also a lot like in February 2022, GCW was announcing a lot of the shows for WrestleMania week to come up the first week of April. But they were also coming off that Hammerstein Ballroom show, which I did the recap for our website.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I know you and Brian were talking about that on the last show, but where they really ran into problems on that show was with their timing. And they ended up with a 6-minute main event with the Briscoes defending the titles. So many other matches, I guess, must have gone long. I know the Janela Cardona match was like a movie with so many different things happening and went very long. So it felt like they weren't really able to take the company to the next level with that show. But now they've introduced this new subscription service on Fight TV. And I do think that that's going to be a better model for them than doing like a big pay-per-view, like a Hammerstein Ballroom, because they are a company that does like, you know, two shows a weekend, and they can put on far better shows than what they put on in the Hammerstein Ballroom. So I think people getting to see more of them is probably going to be better for them. You know, they do have some big stars there, or not big stars, but they, you know,
yeah, notable names. Yeah, yeah.
Notable names, you know? So this was sort of like a big period for them preparing for spring break and the other stuff that they do over WrestleMania week. And it did feel like at this time they were trying to regain some of the momentum that maybe they lost after the response to the Hammerstein Ballroom show wasn't everything they'd probably hoped for.
We'll go into this last chunk to round out the month. MLW Superfight. Kerry and Ricky Morton made their debut as a tag team there. Killer Cross and Scarlett worked this show. Obviously, this is the between times from getting re-signed with WWE. And then EJ Anduka and Calvin Tankman won the tag team titles. From 5150, MLW announced a July show for Chicago. Three of their triple manias, obviously, to plan for. First one started taking shape for Monterrey. We had the Ruleta de la Muerte matches. The tournament essentially were if you lose, you advance, because the ultimate loser was going to lose their mask. Yeah, different kind of tournament there. Super Munico died at age 59. Former AAA announcer Arturo Rivera died at 67. AAA Rey de Reyes, heel El de Vikingo, defeated John Hennigan in the main event there to retain the Mega Championship. Tyle Valkyrie returning to AAA and won a number one contenders match to get a shot against then champion Deonna Purrazzo. Referee Mickey J died. He was a referee in WWE and WCW for quite some time. Hit Row announced they were going to be reuniting in an MCW pro show. Leo Rush announced he was going to be returning to MLW for Kings of Coliseum. However, he had to pull off a terminus appearance due to an injury. Microman signed a multi-year contract with MLW. Oh, yeah. The Garganos, Johnny and Candice welcoming their first child, and then Johnny Gargano was still a free agent at that point. So he was now open to taking bookings for potential appearances, not in-ring, but just appearances in general. We learned that a Teddy Hart documentary is going to be developed for Peacock, which we just, as we record this, just learned about last week. This headline could go in any month, any year. WWE Hall of Famer Tammy Sitch, Sonny arrested on multiple charges. And Alex Zane's suffering was called a ruptured globe in a death match undergoing surgery. It was a ruptured globe. It's a medical term for, I guess, around your eye. So, yeah, he's not big into geography or anything like that. He's not carrying around a globe with him in a death match. But, yeah, he learned that. Thoughts about any of that?
He didn't have like some geography teacher gimmick that he was.
I know, was right? Might be good.
So yeah, I actually had to look up which arrest this was for Sonny, because there was so many. But I wanted to find out if it was the one where the person died, which unfortunately would happen later in the year. Sonny is such a sad story because, you know, it just seems like she couldn't go more than a month without committing a crime, driving drunk. And it felt like everybody who was following her story knew that she was eventually going to kill somebody. And she did. And it's just so sad that so many people saw it coming. And evidently there was nothing that could have been done to stop it. So Sonny's story is very tragic. And it's really too bad because she did contribute a lot to wrestling in the Attitude Era. Like, Sonny was a huge star on Raw while she was there. And, you know, for her life to have gone the way that it did is very sad. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Other things from here, Taya Valkyrie returning to AAA, I thought was pretty cool because she was a big part of their shows for a long time before she ended up going to Impact and then WWE. She was a huge star in Mexico. I remember watching AAA shows and there would be like little girls dressed up to look just like Taya in the crowd. Like she was crazy over for a long time. So her being back there, I think is good for them, because she is a big star in Mexico. It's too bad that she kind of missed the good NXT a little bit. Like she came in and she was Frankie Monet, and it seemed like she just debuted, and then Triple H was no longer involved in NXT, and what NXT was no longer fit with her a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like she never really got that chance to show what she could do in NXT, but her being back now in Mexico and in Impact and MLW, NW, she's in like every other promotion now.
And holding titles. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's weird. Like she's gotten over in every single promotion that she's gone to, but wasn't given the chance in WWE, and doesn't appear as though AEW is interested in picking her up, or else they would have by now. But Taya Valkyrie, she can have some really good matches. She's not afraid to go hardcore with her wrestling matches. So, Leo Rush, this was also kind of a rough time for Leo in Leo Rush's career, because he has had so many injuries. I guess it's mainly just his shoulder over and over again, but it seems like anytime he's kind of being given a chance, he gets injured. And now he's being given a chance in New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's going to be in the World Tag League. And you just kind of hope like, okay, you know, that's a long tournament. Stay healthy if you can do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. The last thing I wanted to mention from this chunk is that I was quite impressed that Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae named their child Quill. Is it Quill? I believe.
Sounds
named after the Guardians of the Galaxy character. Peter so they Quill, really, yeah, yeah, Star-Lord or whatever. And I was like, well, all right, you guys are really into Marvel. It's now impacting the names of your children. Okay, great.
That's a commitment to the bit, right?
That, yes. You are all in.
So that was a busy month. A lot of different things happen, as we talk about always. But yeah, the Cody moves. We're almost at the 3 month mark, and already all kinds of stuff's happened. Brock, the WWE titles changed hands a bunch of times. We have our Mania plans. Cody Rhodes is out of AEW into WWE, and then we had some new signings by AEW to kind of help cover that up or help kind of distract away from it. And yeah, it's there's never a shortage of news in any of these months. Even the ones that there's not a lot of stuff going on, you look back and you're like, oh yeah, this happened, this happened, this happened. There's all types of stuff that happens.
Well, it's interesting to look back on the news that happened in February 2022, because this year has been like the most eventful year, one of the most eventful years in wrestling history. And it's sort of like when you look back on the news that happened in February, it's like we had no idea what we were in store for. Like some of these stories are nothing compared to what we would be dealing with in a few months.
Exactly. So before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to plug social media. I know you're relatively new to Twitter. Congratulations. Good time to start with Elon.
Yeah, I thought it was a good time to get on Twitter.
I know. Yeah.
Check out this Twitter.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Where people can see you, hear you, read you, all that stuff. The floor is yours.
I'm at IanCarry99 on Twitter. I try and tweet out some wrestling news involving like maybe some news out of Canada that you might not have heard too much about. But on that, you can check me out on the Wrestling Observer website. I'm posting stories on there most days.
That's right. Welcome addition to the team. Great addition to the team. Glad to have you.
Thank you
for having me. Your first appearance on Josh Nathan's Punch as a wrap. Congratulations. You've done it. Ian Carey.
Thank you very much. All right.
All right, big thanks to Ian Carey for stopping by. Thought that went pretty well. Hopefully have him back some point in 2023. So January, February are in the books, and now we're on to March and April, which will debut next week, Thanksgiving week, some point during the week. So give you a little bit of holiday listening as you gather people around the table, of course. I am on my way to Full Gear. As you are listening to this, I am hopefully in the air. quick short trip, and we'd be in Newark, New Jersey, beautiful Newark, New Jersey, cold Newark, New Jersey, before you know it. I'll be there all weekend long, covering the events and such for WrestlingObserver.com, starting with a Rampage on Friday, and then also the big main event on Sunday with Full Gear. Looking forward to that, the press conference afterwards, and all the good stuff as well. Lots of news came out of things to, I say today as I'm recording this, being on Thursday, with the Full Gear press conference with Tony Khan talking about, or not talking about, CM Punk and the Elite and so on. Again, kind of sticking to the no comment line and so on. And talking about FTR. As, yeah, a lot of people are very frustrated not understanding why FTR isn't on the show. But this very well, they very well could be added to the pre-show by the time you're hearing this on Friday. But there's a growing kind of, you can kind of feel, not dissent, but a frustration of how FTR is not kind of part of the plans, I guess you'd say, the upper echelon. That could change. Tony Khan spoke very highly of them and so on. And, you know, especially when you talk about like Ring of Honor and things like that, they seem to be a fixture there. So we'll see. Ring of Honor, of course, doesn't even have a separate show. That was talked about today. Sounds like they're going to make a decision about the future of Ring of Honor after Final Battle, which comes up here in just a couple weeks. I thought that was an interesting choice of words. It doesn't sound promising. And when I say it doesn't sound promising, they were very much talking about this TV show and sounded like they were going to have something to announce after the first of the year or for 2023, which I still assume, I feel like something's going to come at Final Battle with some sort of announcement. But it was certainly not optimistically laid out today. He keeps mentioning Warner Brothers Media as an option and doesn't directly say they want to take it. But again, he just keeps talking about the success of the pay-per-views and things like that. But, you know, we're all these months later and still nothing has come up. And obviously, you know, as things come up in March, we're going to talk more about the announcement. Again, it was March 2022. In the next episode, we'll talk about the Ring of Honor announcement that Tony Khan was purchasing it. And again, we're here in mid-November and still there's no TV deal or anything like that. Successful pay-per-views, yes. But, you know, Tony kind of skirted around as he tends to do at times. Dave Bixenspan's question today about hearing Bix on a media call, AEW media call, was something else, by the way. That was pretty cool. And yeah, it was just you know, him just kind of talking about, you know, at that, basically the criticism that ROH titles have kind of muddled things a little bit. And yeah, he just, you know, he kind of put over some of the, you know, the Bandito Chris Jericho match and more kind of recency bias types things. But yeah, it's definitely added a lot of unnecessary, just, there's a lot of titles in AEW, both from the AEW side and the Ring of Honor side. And there needs to be a little bit more sunlight, a little bit more space given and more importance put on the main promotions titles. Essentially, you're booking two promotions in one. And I think there's a little bit of fatigue with that. But again, we'll kind of see how things turn out this weekend and how things turn out at Final Battle. But I thought some of those things were interesting. If you haven't heard that audio, it's available on the website for free. You can check that out and all the news from yesterday. And yeah, stay with us all weekend. It's going to be a fun weekend heading to Newark. And that's it. Until next time, which could be in Newark, insert catchphrase here.